It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station. And joining us, of course, is Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, last week we talked about guardianships.
Mm-hmm.
Guardianship is interesting to talk about it some more today in terms of, you know, I like the word guardianship, so to speak, because I do not like the terminology adjudication of incompetency.
Right.
It is, it's a heavy situation, isn't it? And many times sons and daughters will say, well, can I be the guardian of my mother or dad? They really need me to be their guardian. But, you know, Mr. Collins, Mr. Harvell, I really don't want to adjudicate them incompetent.
Right.
I don't like the fact that they would be deemed to be incompetent. And this is a predicament that we lawyers find ourselves in that really doesn't have a solution.
Now, as you pointed out last week, there are some things that somebody can do with the power of attorney, but guardianship is a step further.
Right? Well, there's everything that someone can do with the power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
They can do everything and then some, and just as much with a power of attorney as with an order of guardianship. Okay. That's why we advise very, very strongly that everyone have a power of attorney, a well-drafted, detailed, very specific power of attorney to a member of their family or loved one or friend or neighbor or whoever they appoint, sibling, and then an alternate, of course. We see a lot of power of attorney, by the way, saw one just yesterday that unfortunately didn't have an alternate. You always need backups. Ben, again, as we talked about, so the power, it's a little difficult to get our head around this. The power of attorney is absolutely ironclad, gets us out of the guardianship arena.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's say, you know, 80-90% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you have a power, either if you don't have a power of attorney, or if you do have a power of attorney, but the principal doesn't recognize it, notwithstanding, won't let the son or daughter, due to dementia, due to anger issues or whatever, not act under the power of attorney. Or if you have a son or daughter or relative acting under the power of attorney where someone else in the family thinks that they are abusing the power of attorney, now we're into a guardianship.
Okay. All right.
So we talked about the procedure a little bit last week. We just kind of relayed the foundation here this morning about what this is. And, you know, of course, guardianship is really kind of a option of last resort. I mean, really, we'd like to deal with these issues, like Cecil mentioned, through a power of attorney, if we can do that. You know, sometimes there's a need for a power of attorney, and the client, the principal, the person who we would need to sign that document just – you know, it's too far gone. Just doesn't have the capacity to enter such a document. So, you know, it's our obligation as the attorneys, of course, to meet with the person to make that assessment. In the event it's a close call, then many times we'll get a doctor's opinion with regard to that. And, you know, if that doctor's opinion, of course, is not positive as it relates to the capacity to enter such documents, then, you know, if there is a need to be able to handle this person's affairs, then in many cases we're having to spin into, you know, that guardianship proceeding.
Right.
So again, you know, the power of attorney having that ahead of time, many times is going to head off the necessity for going through, you know, the guardianship. Now, the guardianship in some cases can be a relatively simple process if it's uncontested. Everybody kind of agrees. All the family members agree. Everybody agrees who's going to be the guardian.
Right.
Everybody agrees that, you know, dad needs somebody to take care of these affairs, but he has advanced dementia, Alzheimer's, you know, whatever the issue might be. But I would say that that is less likely and less common than the situation where there are some issues we have to deal with, at least, maybe somewhat contentious. So the guardianship itself is a, you know, kind of a quasi-lawsuit. It's not as though you just walk into court or walk to the clerk's office with some pieces of paper and have them sign them.
Right.
I mean, really, there's a hearing process. There's a notice process.
Mm-hmm.
Family members are notified of the proceeding. A guardian ad litem is appointed, as we mentioned last week,
mm-hmm.
who is an independent attorney to basically look after the rights of the respondent, the person mm-hmm. who is alleged to be incompetent, so as to make sure that his or her rights are protected.
Right.
And then, of course, there's some fact-finding with regard to the medical condition of the person, maybe some fact-finding with regard to the finances of the person,
mm-hmm.
maybe some fact-finding with regard to who is the best attorney or best guardian in that particular situation. So, you know, it can really take the form of somewhat of a quasi-lawsuit. I mean, it's not a plaintiff versus defendant type lawsuit. It's a petitioner, respondent, guardian ad litem, and interested party lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
So that it can be quite an interesting little gathering sometimes. But, you know, when we get into the process, it can take many twists and turns as well. There's an interesting issue that we deal with quite often in guardianships. And I mentioned this briefly last week, but you know, sometimes when you're the attorney and you're representing the petitioner, the person who is wanting to bring the guardianship, you don't always have that medical opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You don't always have access to the caring physician for this person. You're not always in a position where you can have this person, the respondent, go be evaluated. In many cases,
what restricts you from that usually?
What restricts you is you can't control this human being.
Right.
This is an independent person who is acting on their own accord
and have their rights.
You can't, you know, mm-hmm. handcuff them and take them to the doctor or force them to go to the doctor. And they may have not been to a doctor in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's virtually impossible in many situations to be fully prepared
mm-hmm.
when you file a petition because you don't have access to the person.
Right.
That happens many times. Now think about this.
And HIPAA laws prevent.
HIPAA laws. So. Think about this. Let's say we have someone who's been maybe taken under the wing of a caregiver or taken under the wing of an estranged family member.
Mm-hmm.
And that estranged family member is, you know, talking sweetly to this person and taking care of this person and maybe behind closed doors surreptitiously saying, well, the rest of the family doesn't love you and
mm-hmm.
they're trying to do this and they're trying to do that. Well, someone who has a diminished mental capacity in almost every situation is more susceptible to that type of undue influence.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So in that type situation, that is where we see that maybe we don't have that mm-hmm. medical opinion, but we still have someone who's being taken advantage of.
Right.
So how do we deal with that?
So I guess there's other evidence other than just the medical evidence.
Well, we need to get the medical evidence, but we cannot get it before we file.
Hmm.
This happens in probably half the guardianships we deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And the law recognizes that in that you have the right to ask for a multidisciplinary evaluation. Now, if you have some other way to get to the medical doctor, such as if you're the healthcare power of attorney,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's fine. Maybe we can get to the doctor, talk to the doctor, get the medical records, those kind of things. But let's say that we don't, or let's say that we were and it was revoked by this caregiver we're talking about.
Right.
Well, then, within 10 days of filing the petition, you ask for a multidisciplinary evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
The clerk makes a determination as to whether one would be performed. And that would be a psychological evaluation, really a broad spectrum.
Right.
But that's how we get to that point where we get the medical evidence.
That's not an overnight process.
It's not. It normally takes, you know, maybe 90 days, 60 mm-hmm. days, something like that. But it's certainly okay and contemplated in the statutes that a petitioner may certainly bring a petition for adjudication of incompetence without having mm-hmm. the medical evidence up front because you can't get it.
Right.
So that's fine. If we think this person is really being manipulated, is being taken advantage of, has diminished mental capacity to the point where he or she cannot make informed decisions for himself or herself, intelligent decisions, and maybe a danger to himself, maybe physically or financially, then you can file the petition, ask for a multidisciplinary evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Then we take our time, we get our information, and we see how he's doing.
All right. If you have questions about that, you can give us a call at 800-818-2255 or these local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
And Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. We'll continue right after this. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Thanks for joining us here today. And, of course, Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, and we're talking about guardianship. And
we are.
And about also the cases where somebody may be exerting undue influence. That
right.
Could be, that could be happening. So,
Ben, once they're after these filings are made, a guardian ad litem does their independent investigation, renders a report, either most of them are many times in writing, maybe just even a letter form, but certainly some sort of report. It can be an oral report, testimony, if you will, before the clerk. The clerk, of course, is then going to make a decision. If the clerk determines that the person is incompetent, and then the next question is, who would the guardian be?
Mm-hmm.
And if there is, in fact, a power of attorney or really any document that that can be presented to the clerk to give some evidence, if you will, some indication to the clerk that at this given time, this particular person was who, you know, Mr. Jones or Mrs. Jones had confidence in as their agent.
Mm-hmm.
This is who they chose to be their power of attorney, or, you know, the executor of their estate, or whatever the document might be.
Right.
The clerk is allowed to see that document, okay? And it's not conclusive. It's not binding on the decision of the clerk, but it is some good evidence, if you will. And the clerk will then move to the decision as to who should be the guardian.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we are able to use many times a family member, but if a family is in complete conflict with each other, if it's one of those situations where a sister is thinking her brother is abusing the power of attorney, or vice versa,
right,
then it's likely that the best thing for the clerk to do is going to be to find an attorney or the public guardian, if you will, or some other person other than a family member to serve as the guardian. And they would qualify as the guardian now, Ben. And then they have an order of guardianship, and they post a bond.
Mm-hmm.
And they now have the authority to go to the bank and transfer assets, deal with stock holdings, deal with the real property, deal with the vehicle, the boats, the trailers, all of the very same things that an agent under a power of attorney has the right to do.
Or similar how an executor would act in an estate.
So. Correct. And then the guardian is required under North Carolina law to file an annual accounting and to show what assets have come into the guardianship, what bills have been paid, and what assets now remain. And this is an annual filing. We do many of them at our office. They can be, they can initially, the first couple of years or so, they can be a bit cumbersome for good folks who are serving as a guardian for a loved one. And they want to have a lawyer kind of look over the document, help them frame it up, what's included, what's not included, things of that nature. This accounting is then audited. By the clerk,
right,
and is found to be accurate, reasonable, and then is accepted, and then the process continues indefinitely until such time as, again, similar to a power of attorney, we lose our person under guardianship. They die.
Right.
As we know, it's a good thing to review that when we die, mm-hmm. our power of attorney is, as of that moment, revoked.
Right.
And when we die, if we are under the auspices of a guardianship, the guardianship at that moment is revoked.
Mm-hmm.
There is a final accounting filed for the guardianship
mm-hmm.
through the date of death.
Mm-hmm.
And then the opening inventory for the estate then takes over. The guardian would then pour the assets over to the executor and or administrator of the estate and settle the estate pursuant to the will.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there is no will, then pursuant to intestate succession, as we've discussed here on the
right.
program before.
Now, guardianship may also apply to somebody in a comatose state or some other situations
sure.
there, too, that they may recover from. So can they be
yes.
revoked?
It's called a petition
restoration.
To restore.
Okay.
Yeah,
and
that
absolutely.
Procedure is interesting because, you know, normally when you have the right to a jury,
mm-hmm.
for anything in North Carolina, it's a 12-man jury unless you agree for it to be less. It's six individuals
mm-hmm.
for a petition for restoration of competency. But yes, the respondent would absolutely have that right in the event that they have recovered to that point. And it's a petition. Everyone who was involved in the guardianship has a right to notice of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a matter of, you know, really that petitioner who was the respondent, now the ward of the estate, to put on the evidence indicating that they're now, you know, competent. And
right.
the jurors make that decision. You don't have to ask for a jury. I mean, you could do it before the clerk, but you do have that right
mm-hmm.
if you're petitioning for that.
Okay.
You know, another
I imagine they're fairly rare.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've handled three in 16, 17 years, but
mm-hmm.
every one I've handled, we were able to restore the competency of the person.
Okay.
You don't take those lightly. I mean, obviously, you
yeah.
don't take any of this lightly. I mean, this is a very serious matter.
Absolutely.
But it's a serious area of the law that gives us a lot of tools to deal with situations where people in the world are
mm-hmm.
taken advantage of, you know, kind of surreptitiously, quietly. Maybe someone's being taken advantage of. This is how you bring all that to light. And it's a very transparent type situation. You know, this is fact finding. This
mm-hmm.
is rules of evidence. This is rules of civil procedure. We can see what's been going on with this individual. But really the threshold question is always, is the person really incompetent or not?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just because we think they're being taken advantage of by someone doesn't mean that they're incompetent.
Right.
Okay. But
right.
again, sometimes we have that medical evidence. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we have the right to talk to this person
mm-hmm.
and can talk to this person and see that this person doesn't know what day it is, doesn't know where he or she is,
mm-hmm.
doesn't remember family members. You know, obviously the average person walking down the street, you don't have to be a medical doctor, can kind of make a determination if someone's kind of losing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
Certainly.
Sure.
So,
probably most of us have had relatives with dementia of some capacity. So.
That's right. So that really is the threshold issue. We don't just go file guardianships because we don't like what's going on with, you know, someone and their caregiver. That someone needs to have some significant diminished
mm-hmm.
capacity because, again, it's about really that adjudication of incompetence. But ultimately, the process is to protect that person.
Right.
Right.
So now, can the guardianship, that appointment of a guardian be challenged? Is there
Yeah.
What aspect are you talking about? Well, both aspects really can be.
Yeah.
Number one being whether they're incompetent or not.
Oh, yeah. Well, that part can
Who the guardian is?
Yeah.
Absolutely. What happens there is that there can be motions that are filed before the court. Any kind of motion can be filed,
mm-hmm.
number one. And number two, there can be applications filed to be the guardian.
Mm-hmm.
So we could have a dueling situation. Three or four or five people say, I should be the guardian.
Right. Okay.
A lot of times when you end up
yeah.
in that situation, the clerk will default and say, no, none of you. Public guardian. I'm
going
to name this attorney over here who doesn't have a
dog in the fight.
Dog yes. in the fight. Right.
Right. Right. All right. More to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. All right. Got a caller. Says it had been a 3-car accident on Highway 70 East around the Waffle House in Morehead City and traffic backed up there. You may want to avoid that section. All right. Talking about guardianship here,
mm-hmm.
too.
you know, sometimes, you know, this caller calls in about a car accident. You know, mm-hmm. if someone is, hopefully everybody's okay there, but right. I mean, obviously that kind of brings up an issue that sometimes, you know, people have accidents, like you mentioned,
Ben,
and they end up being incapacitated. A lot of times you get into, you know, dueling guardianships about mm-hmm. who is the guardian, because the question is, who is going to handle the personal injury claim?
Right.
Okay.
I see.
You talk to a lot of these personal injury attorneys who do a lot of personal injury, and where they deal with guardianship more than anything else is where maybe there's a large personal injury claim.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you've got two or three or four parts of the family who are interested in advancing this claim.
Mm-hmm.
And they have their own lawyer, you know, obviously wanting to handle the case for them.
Right.
So then the big question is, who's going to do it? So you end up in that situation sometimes.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's interesting. You mentioned about public guardian. Is that a volunteer? Is that a professional position? Are there people who do that for a living?
There's an appointed public guardian, you know, mm-hmm. in every county. And I don't think they do it for a living. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of their practice.
Right.
And they are entitled to compensation just as they would mm-hmm. normally be as an attorney. But it's kind of the go-to person mm-hmm. when there's just no one who's available, you know, to
right.
handle the situation. And, you know, you got to be a special kind to do that
mm-hmm.
because my understanding is a lot of the public guardian work is, you know, you're managing people's money. You're dealing with a client who just got dropped on you.
Right.
You know.
And you're holding off a lot of other personalities.
And some attorneys may want to do that and
yeah.
some may not want to do it. So, bless their heart, the mm-hmm. ones who do it, because I know it's a very difficult task. We have Mr. Goins, Doug. He's a great lawyer,
okay.
really nice guy. He does that here in Carteret County, and then mm-hmm. we have different attorneys in different areas. But we enjoy working with Doug.
If you want to find out more about guardianship and about all your legal life, you want to talk to the folks at Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law, you'll find them at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, 252-726-9050. That's 726-9050, and online at harvellandcollins.com.